This is a session for Information Farm, recorded on May 9th, copyright 2010, New Grand View Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting at 12:25 p.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Ion.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ion. Are you aware of what we're going to talk about?
Sure.
Okay, so we, James Martinez, myself, Bob, and Ed Strom.
Which Bob?
Bob Dobbs / Bob Neverett.
Oh, good. They're gonna tag team, boys. This ought to be fun.
And we have Ed from Information Farm.
From down on the farm. Yep, we love Ed.
Okay, so we just, James and I, who knew Walter Bowert, both of us, we just discussed Walter after James had done what's become a well-known interview about his life with Walter Bowert. He got interviewed by the Project Camelot website back on November 30th. A lot of people heard that, got interested in James Martinez, and started listening to his show, Cash Flow, and then heard us, and then they got into Ion. So that interview about Walter Bowert brought a lot of people to Ion. All right. Then I was interviewed by Ed a week or so ago, and Ed put that up. So you had James's interview on Walter Bowert, my interview of my life with Walter Bowert, and then today, James and I got together with Ed, and Ed taped us, James and I, talking about Walter, me filling in stuff James didn't know, and James filling stuff I didn't know. So that's done, and we came to the question, it's the question that Frank Zappa asked back in 1966, which was a key year for Walter Bowert, who are the Brain Police? Another way of asking that, what is mind control? How would you define mind control and the meanings and implications of that meme? So we wanted to bring in Walter Bowert and interview Walter Bowert about what we've been talking about. Is that possible?
I guess there's not any rules or limitations. It'd be just fine.
Okay, so he's there now.
Well, what you want to do is you'll want to ask some questions and lay a little groundwork as you're developing it, and then just go right into it. Should be fine.
Okay, so, well, Walter Bowert, what is the... Walter Bowert, are you aware... I'm addressing this to Walter. Are you aware of what James and I just talked about, and do you have a comment on what we said about you and your life and studies?
Well, yes, it's certainly incredible. It was more enlightening after life than during life. Many of the questions that kind of got soaked and brought into a position of light or exposure was even in a larger dynamic than what was trying to be laid out so that the people would know. There was too much of this secret backdoor dealing insights that were always from in a different place now than then, but it was more about the conspiracy of the conspirators and all this extra influence that was moving and controlling the dynamics of the individual human creator mind that had to be put in some box. And so all we were trying to do was expose these potential boxes that were indeed laid out. So, now, a lot of that's been cleaned up now.
Who? By how has it been cleaned up?
Oh, it's been cleaned up for me because now there's no contrast, and you get the whole dynamic that the only mind control is what you control of your mind.
Right.
You find the contrast here.
Okay, so what I get from that is, let's go into what you thought you were learning when you were in the physical. And from you can see that clearly. We don't want to go into what you know now yet. We want to go into, tell us, well, we'll ask questions about it, but
yeah,
what right. was going on? Why did you go to New York City when you were in journalism school?
Well, because that's where all the money checks were, Bob.
So you were only in it for the money?
Well, no, but you had to have some validation, because in that day, if it wasn't validated, you weren't doing anything. You might as well go to Greenwich Village and hang out and smoke dope.
So you had to make money. So a lot of it was in New York.
We wanted validation for our life's work of these things that were coming up that weren't explainable. Things were taking place that could not be defined.
And you saw? Did you see that in high school or college? You saw that?
Started some in high school, but it was more the confounding issues. But college is where it became clearer that these roadblocks were being established, that you can't go outside of this. So therefore, it had to be something else. It had to be something else in control. It had to be something else that was running the show, something else running the system, because it was grander than what humans up until that point had the ability or capacity to be able to conceive.
And was your thinking, Walter, that you're just describing before the Kennedy assassination in November 63?
Well, a little bit before that. There was great cover-up with the paperclip and with the Manhattan Project.
The Nazi Project paperclip, bringing Nazis over. But that was not known at all. What, did you read something?
Oh.
Okay, well, how did Walter find out about that?
Well, through that 2 weeks in Elk Ridge, Bob.
He spent 2 weeks in Elk Ridge?
Absolutely.
Well, how old was he then? Were you, Walter?
It was about 3 years before... It was about 3 years before New York.
Well, that would be when you were still living in Oklahoma or Nebraska, whatever it was, out there in your home states. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Well, how did you end up there? Who took you there?
It was a journey. It was nothing other than a simple little field trip. And it was at Teleco Plains in Tennessee, where there was lots and lots and lots of odd things going on. So you go and see what was going on to the point of, and it wasn't what you could find out, it's what they wouldn't let you find out, the places they wouldn't let you go, the control that they wouldn't let give you access, when there was no reason that you couldn't take a little rowboat out into the lake.
So you did you hitchhike there?
Took the bus.
So what event happened in the media that triggered your interest?
Just that everything's wonderful in Teleco Plains.
Everything's wonderful there. It was advertised as a resort place?
No. They were being very, very weird. Walter Cronkite was doing a big, big show about how everything was fine and nothing was going on in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Well, this Teleco, that word, is that a town?
Yes, it's a place.
Is that near?
Place is as close as we could get.
To Oak Ridge?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So if people were interested in the atomic program, Eisenhower brought in, you know, atom bombs for peace and talking about nuclear energy, people would know that came from the Manhattan Project. So Walter, as a high school student or college student, was interested in what was happening with nuclear energy?
No. No. There was a Cold War going on, Bob.
That's right. And Walter felt that Walter felt that something was not being addressed, because Walter...
Most of it wasn't. Everything was one conspiracy after another, and all you could find out is what they told you it was, and nothing else.
So this, when you say conspiracy, that would be the the worrying about the communist conspiracy that the Pentagon...
Well, the worrying about it, yes, and then the outside influences, which was the biggest conspiracy of all, of how it applied, how you apply the conspiracy to the, what is it, your McLuhan-esque version of the meme to get a handle on what's really going on.
Right, so you're saying there was the communist conspiracy, and Walter was looking behind that conspiracy. Who was saying that communist was a conspiracy? Something like that.
Yeah.
What is there an author he read around then that got him thinking this way?
Several. There were several, but most of it was underground. It wasn't so much authors as it was papers. You could have lots of, they had lots of little papers that could go out for this conspiracy world.
You mean newspapers?
No, no. They would do a separate paper, a little manifesto here and there of regarding what was really going on.
Yeah, like fringe publications, we would call them.
Kind of, yes. Like a widely produced publication which had a mailing list of two.
And would that include John Birch literature, John Birch Society?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so he was looking into that in when he was in college. He was born in 1939, so he'd be 20 and 59. So I'm not sure when he left college, but he definitely was in college by 59. So, and this is a few 3 years before New York. New York is like 60, 61, 62, somewhere like that. So, yeah, 58, 59, 3 years before going to New York. So, did you go, Walter, to New York to become a journalist or an artist or both or do anything?
Anything in those days. You could write your ticket. If you could get to New York, you could write your ticket.
Right. Once in there, you had the status of being a New Yorker.
And if you were a New Yorker, then you were already versed. And if you were not, if you were a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, that pot of soup didn't notice.
Right. So, James, do you have a question that comes up in talking about this early period?
The early period?
Yeah, this period we're talking about. What comes to your mind?
What did you, Walter, did you wish that you were just a painter? Is that one of the things that you just wanted to do is become a painter?
Yes, but it was never enough. I could never get happy enough with my work to make it be my life's work.
Because there was always the ongoing investigation of the big picture, which was that you were driven by.
Absolutely, because it never made sense. Just when you get it all figured out, then they go, no, 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 it's not that, it's this. No, 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 it's not this, it's that. No, it's not that, it's the other that. No, it's the other that, it's this, it's that. And you could do a painting, and by the time you got it done, it never fit the bill for what the art world said was okay. You had to be more salacious to be noticed.
To be noticed. So we could say, Walter, you were what we call a news junkie today.
Certainly.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Because you got to realize that time, everything had just come off the Korean conflict, and all this business was going on. Everything was super, communistly driven. I mean, you could smoke the wrong brand of smokes, and they'd call you a communist. So, this was ramping up, getting into the places with Goldwater and all that political regime as well.
Right, and it was leading up to the very serious time of the October Missile Crisis, which was the closest humanity would come to nuclear war, maybe.
I guess that's, well, maybe that'd been the first time pigs flew, huh?
Okay, so you get to New York. You, I think, marry a teacher. I'm not sure. Her name's Linda. Why did you drop out and go to Puerto Rico?
Well, because there was a great, great work going on in Puerto Rico at the time, because you had access to all or a huge amount of information that was not available in the States. Plus, it was a great, fun place to be. Plus, the weather was nice. Plus, it had the best coffee in the world.
Did you know that before you went there?
No.
Okay, so what was going on there? You said, what, something military? What's going on in Puerto Rico?
There was lots of information flowing through Puerto Rico that was not available in the States, because everything was blanketed. It was completely controlled in the States. They tell you what you're supposed to be able to know. And if you knew something outside of that, then you were a communist. Puerto Rico, anything went.
So you found out that someone tell you Puerto Rico was like this?
Sure.
So it was like a free place. It was like going to maybe Haight-Ashbury in 67, or a sense of a place where there was a little more freedom of exchange.
Yes. Well, and you wouldn't be labeled or branded just because you had a thought.
Right. Okay, so why did you come back from Puerto Rico?
Well, it got hot. It got very hot.
You mean physically, the weather?
No. the climate. The climate.
The information climate in the United States.
Well, in Puerto Rico, yes.
Okay. In other words, it was uncomfortable to be there?
Yes.
Because the control in the States was coming to Puerto Rico?
It was, and this was when the big stages, the big things started coming on with the offshore banking in the Bahamas, and all of that issue pointed right there at that Guantanamo Bay.
Right, and that's what LaRouche calls Dope Inc. Dope Incorporated started, the Caribbean drug laundering, money laundering thing started there in that period. So you kind of got wind. Did you know that's why there was a bit of a police state happening in Puerto Rico, because of that?
Well, yeah, when you got a little island and all of a sudden tanks start showing up, yeah, you kind of start noticing that all of a sudden everything is one great big camp.
Did you understand that there was laundering of money and dope stuff going on?
It wasn't about dope. It wasn't about dope in those days. In those days, if you were there, they didn't call it dope. They just called it weed, happiness. You know, you did what you did. It'd be no different than you know, having a glass of banana rum.
Right, but so that is the banking, what LaRouche calls Dope Inc., is not what you were responding to. You were just talking about the militarization, and it was uncomfortable. So
that was the cause of that militarization, but yeah.
The dope laundering was the cause?
Well, it wasn't.
No, the money laundering.
The banking.
Yeah, the banking. The offshore.
It had nothing to do with dope. It had everything to do with people hiding money so they didn't have to pay taxes. Plus the reality that the government was quickly getting out of control.
The Puerto Rican government.
No, the U.S. government, because that's what that was all about. That's why they'd all run to the Bahamas.
Right, because that was after the Kennedy assassination. LBJ was president, you know, 64, 65, that period, right?
Yes.
And so are the tanks in Puerto Rico, are they Puerto Rican military controlled by the Pentagon, or it's American tanks going in?
American tanks.
Okay. So it was the beginning of the identity crisis for the American power machine.
Yes.
They started to tighten up their controls and spread it around in the South America.
Because they'd just gotten through with the Cubanos and that whole place, so they were like, we ain't giving them any more space. They can go to Cuba and get as big as they want. But
nowhere else.
They could have taken all of that and basically blocked anything coming in and out of Miami. Easy.
Okay, so you come back to New York City, and what inspired you to do the East Village Other newspaper?
Well, you had a bit of liberality that had taken force. You had the Flower Children who were kind of like pushing it out, and the bra burners, and the whole world was changing.
Well, that was later. That's 68. What's going in 65? The main thing is Dylan is happening. The Beatles are happening. You know, for the youth.
That was that revolution. That was that beginning of the revolution.
Yeah.
They started burning bras long before they went to the White House Mall strip off.
Okay, so this liberality is happening in New York. And what did you think you would contribute there with the notion of a weird newspaper?
By being able to get the words, at least lay out the words, so that the individual regular Joe could have the right as a citizen to make their own informed decision.
See, that's what I meant, James, about the Vietnam veteran reality in Walter's life. The average Joe and how he was getting duped.
Right.
So had you taken...
Well, you had all that clearly. There was much more propaganda from the Korean conflict than ever was from Vietnam, because that was just the push. That's when people had had enough.
Right.
But if you looked at the ones that came out of the Korean conflict, they could, that the worst things took place, but nobody said that. Nobody said a word. You better not say a word against baseball, apple pie, and Chevrolet. You better not say anything against those, or they'd have you in for questioning.
Okay, so you read McLuhan around that point.
Well, best you could, yeah.
What's that mean? Best?
It was so over the top.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense. It'd be like saying, oh, I thoroughly enjoyed Finnegan's Way. I didn't say that.
That's right. People didn't get it. So
they still don't get it, but it's okay.
So, James, or Ed, you can jump any time if you've got any questions that come up from where we're talking about.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Go ahead, Ed.
No questions, Ed?
No questions right now.
Okay. So,
oh, you know what? I do have a question. Walter, I was going to ask you about Colonel Oleg Pinkovsky. You know what I'm talking about? And I think
yes.
You had written that the agency, after the colonel...
Hey, Ed, come call. Your mic is a little distorted.
Okay, thank you.
So you're recording.
Okay, so Pinkovsky was a spy for Russia. He was in the... They were using his information to actually interpret the missiles in Cuba, that the U-2 spy planes were too high and they had low-resolution pictures. And it was Pinkovsky's information that really allowed them to identify the missile sites. So when the Russians found out, they tried him and killed him. And I think you had written that then the CIA tried to recruit Pinkovsky's ghost to spy on the Soviets.
Yes.
So is that possible? Can ghosts be recruited?
Certainly. The residue, all they wanted was the pinpointed information of how close and how, if they were activated or not. And so the residue could, they were, in those days, that was going to see the psychic was very, very mainstream. That was when everybody went out and bought them a Ouija board. So yes, that was very normal. They called it the para-spiritual.
You mean the CIA called it that?
Yeah, it was what the file was called.
So did they get the ghost?
Yeah, that's how they found them. That's how they pinpointed them when they put the boats in the water to make sure that they closed off Cuba, because if what got in those boats got to those missile launching stations, the fuses, as it were, then you'd have had a way different conversation. Well, now, Kennedy could have hung around, but you'd have been having a way different conversation.
When you say Kennedy could have hung around and continue being president, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So Walter wrote about this, Ed?
Did you, Walter?
Did Walter Bowert wrote about this, Ed? This thing you just brought up, this colonel?
Well, I'm asking Walter because I think it was the Bowen character. Maybe we should ask about that.
Okay, yeah, we'll get to that. So the point, that's it. So anything more you want to know about? They did use the ghost, and Walter Bowert was correct.
Yeah,
and that's
good.
How they found the pinpointed. Because, see, they didn't know how many bases they were. That was the issue. It was, if they just had one, and if they could have done it just right, see, they could have bombed all of Cuba. But see, if you miss it, then you bombed them, and there's no weapons of mass destruction. Or if you miss one, then they're going to shoot back. And it's not just Cuba you're dealing with; it's all of Russia. And then the Cold War turns into a hot war.
Yeah. So they had to be really careful, and they knew enough, because the scientists that came over through the Nazi scientists, Nazi intelligence people that came over after World War II, they were in the Pentagon. They had used mediums in the Hitler regime, so they were familiar with using extra para-spiritual methods for finding out things.
Well, of course, that was the whole gist of Paperclip.
Okay, we got that. That's the whole other story. So Walter, I mean, you didn't know about that in 1965 when you started to East Village Other, I assume. Why did you leave the East Village Other in 1968?
Well, it was a sign of the times. It was just on the process. There was no way that you could be in the mainstream and take on some of the things we were taking on at the time to be there.
There's no way the alternative press could continue. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Well, it did. It did carry on. East Village Other with Alan Katzman and those people.
But the work certainly changed.
Yeah. And so then Nixon gets in. Now, and then all that alternative press became weekly papers. The LA.
Yeah, and then Dixon came in.
Dixon?
Gene.
Oh yeah, to help Richard. Yeah, to help Nixon. That's right. He used Gene Dixon. Dixon for Nixon. So, what? Why did you leave New York City and go with Peggy to Arizona?
Well, it was just a new frontier. It was an easy place where you had lots of the better weather. You didn't have all the snow, and you didn't have all the congestion, and it was just a blank palette.
So why did you start being interested in Sufism? Were you already interested in it, or did you meet some Sufi Sam out there, and that was a new knowledge system for you?
It was in that new frontier, and when in Rome, look about what the Romans are doing. So how that worked out, and it was very fun, very enlightening.
So then, you then discovered with your Vietnam veteran friend about the MK Ultra, the drug hypnosis programming of soldiers. Is there anything you would say about what you discovered then and wrote the book Operation Mind Control? What would you say about that now, from your perspective now?
Well, now it was just that new place of information that was actually available always. But the drug and then every other component thereof with a little dab of LSD, you could have all kinds of different experiences. That the mind was a larger conduit. The mind was a much more vast conduit for flow of information than anyone could ever dreamed.
That's right. You said that to me. That sounds like stuff you would say. The mind control, the book Operation Mind Control goes into the negative CIA control of people through drug hypnosis.
Well, they called it head gravy, yeah.
Yeah, head gravy. So you're saying, all right, I'm not sure, you're saying that out there in Arizona and then Colorado, you discovered the implications of the mind or of drugs and that or something?
Yes, and not from a government Politburo-driven workhorse, but from a free-thinking capacity as just a regular human being that could also engage in larger dynamics.
All right, so you're saying that that's what you see from your perspective now, where it's no contrast, so you can see everything pretty well clearly. You see that that's what you were really interested in back then. But you emphasize the negative stuff.
Well, let's just go at it this way. The only way to get full disclosure is to tell it all. And that's what we were about, is to tell it all.
Right.
And that's them that likes it, and them that didn't, and them that got with it, and them that got over it. If you could, once a human creator had access to the information, they could decide for themselves. And there'd been plenty enough of going on of backdoor dealing, disappearing. Oh, where did they go? Oh, they moved. Where'd they move to? Nobody's heard from them ever again. And then they end up in a shallow dumpster somewhere. So, enough. It was put it out. Everybody decided for themselves. And there's no reason that it should be controlled for such a degree that's where it got a lot of steam in the first place. Because folks were already getting this confounded, confining place of, well, everything will be fine as long as we do what they say. But then you go, who's they? And they go, don't ask too many questions or you'll find out.
Okay, so that was your motive in writing Operation Mind Control, was to show the unnecessary control of people.
Sure.
And also how drugs could be used for that.
And also how drugs didn't work when they had their whole army of assassins that were all mapped out, lined out, their whole line of assassins, and the next thing you know, something would snap, and they'd be activated over anything rather than the set points that would send them in to do their job that they would have no knowledge or recollection regarding.
Right. So I brought in the fact, your perspective now, but you were talking about, see, we shouldn't have, I don't want to talk about what you think now, but we did bring in that.
Uh-huh.
Just for that thread.
It's
right.
Okay. Nobody heard.
See, because it gets confusing. Walter was all about freeing up information, you know, when he was alive. That's what you were about. And we'll go into what you learned. You sort of hinted at it, but I don't know. Could you restate, what does Walter think about his book, Operation Mind Control, now?
Well, now, but you didn't want to talk about now.
So yeah, no, okay, now I'm saying let's talk about it in this right now.
Okay, well, now you look at it and kind of go, well, it didn't quite hit the mark because it did more to confuse folks regarding it than it did to enlighten them.
Yeah.
It was just more screaming and hollering, and it got so sandbagged that it didn't really come into embraceability till much later.
What didn't come embraceable?
What was said.
Well, okay.
Conspiracies just made for more conspiracies. When you could have just said, this is what it is and it's no big deal, then it would have been embraced and it would have changed the outcome of many, 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 many things.
So the book made too much of a big deal about something?
Of the conspirators' power and control over you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now, what does that bring out of you, James? You must have some questions about that.
Well, the first thing, back up a second, is what was the drug, Walter, that initiated the 40-day experience that you had? Was it
in the fall of 66.
Okay. That was a combination. There was an opiate, there was an acid, there was LSD, and it was a very strict control where you do a bit and a bit, and then we got into a place where it was indeed 40 days and 40 nights of let the good times roll.
Who gave you that drug?
Where the different components came from, we could never find out, because this was top, over the top in those days. But then John Barringer put it together and made it available.
John Barringer. So how did they get inside Walter's body?
They tried several different ways. First, they tried to eat it. That didn't work.
They tried to get you to eat it.
Yeah. Then it was to try to shoot it. And that was too much. Because you got to realize in the wrong components, you get so happy your heart would stop beating.
Okay, hold a minute. I'm assuming that this was put inside you without your knowledge.
Well, it was. The one that finally worked was a transdermal, DMSO.
How did the person get, will they brush up against Walter on the street?
No. It was done a little at a time. It was from a topical cream.
So, DMSO. I know it, Hens. You talked about that. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little at a time, a little at a time, to the point to you almost like a junkie craving it. Then, to get treatment for that, then they put a patch of what they call a poultice, and that's what set off the 40 days of rain.
Okay, Walter, who put the stuff on your dermis?
Well, that would have been just the little nurse lady at the clinic.
Why were you in the clinic?
Because they were giving this small doses of this cream to help with a little bitty rash of sorts. So this, and it didn't work, and it made you kind of jonesing for the cream. So then they gave you the full poultice, which blasted it.
Okay, so you went into the clinic for a physical problem, a rash.
Right.
And they were watching you?
Certainly.
And they took advantage of that. This would be, where would this have happened?
Well, it would have been the clinic on Well, it would have been back in the States.
Yeah, it'd be New York City.
It would have been, let's see. What is it, First and 46th Street, the clinic there?
Okay, that's approximately First, because he was living over in First and Second Avenue. So he'd go up to 46th, right? It's a possibility. So,
and that's where it was.
So what was the reason?
Might have been 44th, but it was either 44th or 46th, yeah.
But what was the rash that made you think you had a physical problem, or what was the ailment you
thought it was a breakout? It looked like poison ivy or sumac.
Right. So you just go to the hospital, and you're being monitored, and so they said, he's sitting here. We can put some cream on him.
Well, when it first happened, they gave the cream, and it didn't have any effect at all. And you use a little at a time, and it got me to the point that I was freaking out because the cream was making me see things. So it built up in my system to the point that I was thought I was losing my mind, because why would I have such a craving for this cream? And then I went back to the same clinic, and they said, you got this a little wrong. We need to put a mask of it in, a poultice of it. And that's when the full onslaught began.
Okay, so was Behringer overseeing this operation on Walter?
He was one of the, what they called back in those would have been a practitioner.
Right, so the
doctor wasn't a nurse. It was a little more than a doctor. It's what you'd go to the clinic to pick up a pill. Same way when you needed some penicillin, if you got a little too rowdy at the bar and brought something home.
Right.
Then you'd go there and they'd give you a shot of penicillin and you'd be all right.
So Walter, who was orchestrating this? You say Behringer, but was he employed by the CIA or whoever?
Yes, and lots of other ones. Lots of alphabet people, we call them.
Right. So why were they monitoring you, Walter?
Well, because the information that we had sort of put out was a little bit too sweet.
Okay, so
close to
home. Did
they want to kill you with this cream?
No, they thought, well, no, because we knew enough to get ahead of that. No, they wanted to portray me as card-carrying crazy, so it wouldn't make any difference what I said. Nobody'd believe it.
If
I'd have disappeared, that would have fit right into the conspiracy that had already been thoroughly laid out and embraced.
What would? I missed the verb or the noun there. What? It would. Say that again?
If that had killed me, too many people would have noticed.
Right, right. It would confirm the conspiracy.
It would have confirmed the conspiracy. But if I was to be alienated as crazy, then it would have been, well, he's just had a little too much, so, you know, don't worry with him.
Yes, and that was the standard procedure back then in the early information world. If you were an information figure like he was, you standardly made you look nuts. I mean, mirror you.
If that meant they tried to introduce you into a little heroin was the rage of the day, they could get you on a little heroin, you'd be a junkie, and then nobody would care what you had to say.
All right, so they
that was a bit off the charts in those days.
To be a junkie.
To be a heroin junkie.
Yeah. So how many times did you go to the clinic, or was the poultice enough?
No. It was over 6 months. It was an over a 6 month period.
That you'd go to the clinic every now and then?
Mm-hmm. When you'd run out of cream. And each time they'd say, let's go a little bit stronger. It's not quite reaching it. And I knew that it was silly because this particular rash ought to have been cleaned up with some calamine lotion. It should have just been easily dabbed with some calamine, dried up, and it's done. Well, instead, this would just get more itchy.
So what did you think was going on there?
Well, I didn't know. Thought something. Then they were talking about cancer and all kinds of other different melanomas of the day. And thought they were trying to use this cream, this topical cream, so they didn't have to cut my arm off.
Okay, so meanwhile, you're having these weird hallucinations under this effect.
Yes. Sir.
And you always talked about it subsequently to everybody as a meaningful experience. Why did you think it was real?
Well, it was real.
And
are you joking? It was real.
So it did allow you to see alien intelligences and ghosts or whatever, all that stuff?
Well, it opened up to all kinds of things.
It's like triggered. Would that be triggering chromosome 14?
No.
Okay, that's not that.
I don't know what you mean.
Right. So what it would open your access to parallel worlds?
Well, that wasn't the point. What do you mean, parallel worlds?
Well, okay, it was real to your perception, but Ion, was it real?
Okay, wait, slow down. Which way you want it now?
Yeah, no, we're talking to Walter, and Walter felt it was real.
Yeah.
Now, we get an outside observer, Ion.
Okay, so we're changing it. All right, now.
No, okay. We're going to go back. I don't want to just stay with, I'm going to stay with Walter, but just, here's Walter thinking it's real, and he told everybody what he learned on the experience.
Right.
Would I or someone outside say, Walter, you're describing things that you hallucinated? And I'm asking Walter, for you, they weren't considered, well, you knew you were hallucinating, but you thought it was real information. Stepping aside for a second, Ion, was he just hallucinating?
What's the difference?
Okay, so there's no difference.
What? No. What is the? You say no difference. No, we're asking, what do you think the difference is? An imagination, a vivid imagination, and card carrying crazy. What's the difference?
No difference there.
Well, hallucinations, something that hallucinated from the confines of your mind. It's just as real. It's just as real as if. If you think you're on fire, you might as well be on fire. You can hallucinate being on fire and drown yourself trying to get the fire out.
Okay, so did Walter talk to alien intelligences as some external foreign world objects and species?
Yes, but it wasn't so foreign. It wasn't so foreign. That was the hallucinogen that was used to lay out the interaction was taking place at all anyway. See, it was the end before the means. They used the alien words to validate just the power that was already within the confines of the already human mind.
Right. Okay.
That's not Walter's words. Those are our words.
Right. Okay, so... One more question to you before we go back to Walter. Was Walter confused by this process?
Confused? No. Confounded? Yes.
Did Walter go into the non-time or to future times and see future actualities?
All time.
He did see. Yeah, he did talk about that.
All time, because in that place, Bob, there was no, you couldn't discern between live or Memorex, future, past, and even sort of called side experiences, which means you have a thought and you don't act it out, and then you go through it and you try it out. So you have in your, what you call flash forward, where you have like a side flash.
Yeah.
You had those as well.
Yeah.
So those got layered and registered as reality.
Okay, so Walter was confounded. That means it was a blissful, fun experience.
Yes.
But then he would have to relate it to what he thought he was and the society he thought he was part of.
Of course, because otherwise, how do you gauge how you're doing?
All right, so that's helpful. So now we come back to Walter.
Okay.
Walter, so... What did you think, were you suspicious of this experience that you had?
Well, it was certainly mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It laid out in what I had discovered so far with this whole conditioning. It was almost a conditioning program. Within this conditioning program, you could be convinced that you were a murderer or you were a agent or you had... They were out to get you, and you had to take out this one or take out that one. It was laid out that way to the point that you actually couldn't get any different. Everybody turned into a communist at that point.
If they were on this drug or the...
Yeah.
Okay.
There's only Big Brother that could help you.
Right. If you, okay, so what, why did you obsessively talk about this experience for the rest of your life?
Well, because it altered the very fabric of what I called reality.
So
it
then,
validated for me the conditional response that a reality could be skewed and it not be your original optimum choice, based on giving so many choices that you could get convinced of practically anything.
Right. So is it, go ahead. Someone say something?
I said, well said.
Yeah, yeah. And so we were just talking to Ion Walter, another aspect in this experience here, and he said you weren't confused, you were confounded. And so your exploration of the book, what became the book Operation Mind Control, and all your other investigation was always trying to figure out the confoundment that you...
Of course.
I see.
Of course. How could it be so real and be gibberish?
Yeah.
And that, move markets and move worlds from gibberish.
So that makes sense, James. That's why he always... I was saying earlier when we were talking, James, before we brought an eye on that, it was his standard, what he measured everything against, and I was saying that he was, that Walter was enlightened by this, and he wanted to see if other people knew as much as what he get from it. But I think Walter and I are pointing out that Walter didn't necessarily think that was the standard. He just was forever pondering and confounded and investigating it. Would you agree with that, James?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what we're getting from Walter right now. Okay, so now you transition. What did you learn about this drug or experience from the perspective where you are now in a contrastless being?
Well, in a contrastless world, you figure out all the pipes, all the plumbing, all everything gets synced up. Now, you have no contrast, so you have no conditional ability to create, but you don't care. You're so happy now, you know what happy really is. Many of those days were part of that culmination of this non-resistant knowing that can erase any objection or objective that would be outside of a realm of endless impossibilities.
Right. So you're saying that the experience on that drug, that cream, made you
got
feel
you in the ocean, got you used to the motion of the ocean. Yes.
Which is what you experience once you're in non-physical.
Absolutely.
So it gave him intuition. So did he... No, I won't bring Ion back in. Okay, so you learned... you now know what was attractive about the experience because it was intimations of the contrast of non-physical state you were eventually...
Correct. It got rid of the rules. That's right. What it did most than anything. It got rid of the rules. And once you get... Anytime you become... objectively separated from rules and regulations, then of course you can arrange it in any way you'd like to.
Right. So once the book came out, and that caused a lot of discomfort in your private life, and then we get into the 80s and Reaganomics comes in. What was your feeling about the 80s as it unfolded?
That they had once again buried it in some Senate subcommittee somewhere, and it was business as usual.
Right. So did that depress you?
Well, there was depression just because of just because you got into a place of enlightenment, then you were subject to being castrated, but that might be too strong of a word.
Yeah, you mean castigated.
Well, no, it was the castigation, of course, took place, but that was more from me, not so much from everything else. I had gotten this far down the rabbit hole, and now what?
Yeah.
See, you know, which is it? Is it all Big Brother and you're screwed, or is it can you come into your place? Where do you fit into your place of power? And if it has to come from Big Brother, then Big Brother must be the one who sets how it's going to go. So it's not an empowering experience.
Right. So that makes sense, James. That's what he was puzzling about in the 80s and 90s for me. I was asking about what did you think of the abductee world in the early 90s and wanting to start the East Village Other on the internet. What were you imagining? And what was the name of the foundation, James? Freedom of Information Foundation?
Freedom of Thought Foundation.
Freedom of Thought Foundation, which is consistent. That title is consistent with what you were saying about yourself back in the 60s. It's the same thing, freedom of thought. That was your main agenda.
Yes.
So in the 90s when you were with Pat and traveling around and speaking, what did you think you were doing then?
Just trying to survive. Everything became a point of what's the point.
Yeah. So trying to survive.
Is that why your health fail? You didn't care anymore?
Well, it's just to the point where it was just no fun. You couldn't get anywhere.
You mean in his thinking or in a project? Yeah. And that affected your health?
Of course.
Right.
It gets in bed with you.
Beg your pardon?
It gets in bed with you.
Yeah. Okay, so then you meet James. Do you want to comment on your relationship with James?
Well, you know, of course it was refreshing that you could clearly have an open, insided mind that could take on any topic without any fear or disdain and really have great fun with it. It was fun again. That was great. The interaction of that was great.
Good. So, James, ask some questions about your relationship with Walter.
What happened when we were in Yucca Valley and we did the sacred mushroom there? What were you doing?
Well, that was quite a trip. It was quite a trip. From the best I recall, it was mostly from a place of short version of dancing your clothes off.
You mean the joy of taking your clothes off?
No. Just the freedom of not being bound. It was the days of no consternation.
And how many days was that, James? James, how many days was it, this experience?
About a day and a half.
Oh, okay. So then your next question was?
Were you in your element there, Walter?
Certainly. The blissful feeling that nothing mattered, nothing else mattered, and it was great fun.
What do you remember about that experience, James?
Well, that was the first time that I telepathy, speed, instantaneous recognition, possible insanity all at the same time. It was the first time I confirmed that telepathy existed because of stuff.
You could feel the words. You could feel the words.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And so, Walter, is that that you initiated that for today, tomorrow, and the next day? If we're talking about there's no time?
Certainly. Because if you recall, in that experience, there was no time.
Right.
So what did you mean, James? You're saying, you're asking Walter if he initiated it? What do you mean?
Did you, Walter, create that experience for my benefit in my timeline now?
Oh, of course. Well, I mean, it was your choice, but sure, you could enjoy as much as any of us did.
Is the same feeling tone of that connection, telepathic connection, then the same as it is today, or is it different now?
We would say it's much more heightened now because you don't have to be shrooming to enjoy it.
Right.
You can bring that out-of-body experience into your body.
You're talking about for people today.
Well, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
James.
Yeah.
Did you get my communication at your funeral?
Yes, and we appreciate those words, and you've done a great job of bringing forth the actual dynamic of getting what I was about anyway. And your work has always underlyingly been greatly appreciated that you even regarded our words as important.
Good. Thank you. Is there, I think I've asked this before, so I'll ask it differently. Is there information that you've left for me to pick up or discover later on from this time that we're talking about in this moment, like a year from now, 2 years, something like that?
Yes. Okay. It's in the secretary, in the drawer of the secretary.
Right. Okay. I got it.
Yeah, we've done that before. That's
right.
And James, have you found that desk?
No.
Okay.
No, I've been initiated again because of Gabriel Green's Amalgamated Flying Saucer Club. Somebody's interested in picking up that Walter and buying it. So there's money involved again. We're in the money thing again.
That's right. And all the ex-wives will fight.
Right. Okay.
That's true.
Go ahead.
No, you, James, you go for a while.
Did you show me anything unique in Peru?
Yes, in the water. The pond. Yes.
In the pond.
Yeah, that was Ion told that to James, you know, back when that happened. Remember he told you, what did you see in the water? Remember that reflection thing?
Right. Right.
Is that what you're referring to, Walter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Towards the end, one of the last later temples.
So, Walter, did you somewhere in your creation make an agreement to come through Ion before Ion knew that he was going to be Ion? It was going to be Ion.
Yeah, no.
No?
No.
No.
Well, you spoke through this medium, sort of, somebody. We'll keep their identity confidential. And in retrospect, it might have been March 24th. So that's a week after Ion showed up. I'm a bit vague on that because Walter came through Ion and prepared me for what I was going to do on March 25th, I think. Prepared me what James would, how he'd react to what I said on March 25th, 2009, which was based on experiencing Ion for a week. But in my memory, there was something said in May 2008 where Walter said my chart, through this other medium, Walter said my chart and its dealing with time would become way more complex. And it has become more complex in retrospect since encountering Ion.
Because there isn't any.
That's right.
Complex.
Right. So in May 2008, which is almost a year before Ion showed up, were you aware that Ion would come to us, Walter?
That's what I want to say. Yes.
No. See, because there's no time where we are. So it was all unfolding. It was unfolding.
It was already happening.
It was already happening. So it was just a matter of syncing up. The experience.
Yeah.
If you jumped and waited another 500 years to do that, we got time. We're good.
Right.
No hurry. No lines, no waiting. It's great.
So,
dream all day, every day. It's way cool.
Well, when I'm now addressing Walter, I was in New Zealand the week you were transitioning, and then you transitioned on the 18th of December, and then I flew from New Zealand through Sydney to Los Angeles, and in Sydney, the plane got held over a day, so at the hotel I got to watch the third Bourne, the ultimate Bourne Identity movie, which I hadn't seen any of the series, but I thought it was so much your work. Were you influencing me to see that, to experience?
Yes.
So you could make the plane be delayed?
Well, no.
It would also...
It synced up for you.
In other words, I wanted to have that delay.
Of course.
Right. So you then provided my attention to look at the hotel TV and then noticed this movie was on.
Of course.
And then I was on my way to meet James, so it was necessary to see that. It was fun to see it. So you were tracking the meeting that James and I were going to have.
Of course.
That would lead to the radio show.
Of course.
Do you have any comment on...
Because of James is... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Because of James's position of bringing it to some working conclusion.
Right, right.
James wanted it to work, and he didn't know how to make it work, and he didn't know how far to go, and he'd seen how it worked for me, and he's like, well, wait a minute. Maybe not so what, not so much. He wanted the benefit without any of the responsibility, and that's okay.
So you knew that I could help James on that area.
Oh, certainly.
Right.
He was listening to you, Bob.
Beg your pardon?
He was listening to you, Bob.
So James would listen.
Certainly.
Yeah. So that's interesting,
so
James.
Walter,
right?
I've got to ask you, what did you say to me the last time I saw you?
The context of it was keep on fighting.
Ah, I understand. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is this the day of that interview with the Vietnam veteran?
No, I actually
later
saw him after that.
Right.
Later.
It was at the female doctor's home?
It was right before he left.
For Washington State?
Yes.
Yeah. And so that would be at the doctor's home?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So what Walter just said makes sense?
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like
you're saying... Goodbye, basically.
Well, of course, because you knew it was done.
Yeah, James. Yeah, I did. James. So but Walter, you knew that James wanted to carry on what he thought Walter was about, and Walter knew that that would create problems.
He was interested, and he knew that he could, that he'd seen how it worked out in my world, so he knew where the pitfalls were, and could adjust accordingly. So he softened it a bit and made it be the Politburo is still served, but he doesn't have to be in the crosshairs of it. It doesn't have to be his Politburo.
Yeah, you mean James.
Yeah, he can explain it and get every dynamic regarding it without having to be the author of it.
Right.
Very good.
So you... James has talked about it. You were very frustrated in the last years of your life, and maybe you always were frustrated. What was that frustration coming from?
Well, the frustration was coming from, and it was an ongoing pursuit, but then when this thing, I knew there was no time, and yet I was being judged by it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew there was a timeless reality, but yet I was being judged by a reality that had to do with time. And it was very, very sobering because it's kind of like, well, great. Well, that was fun. That was about as much fun as a stick in the eye. Just now we got it figured out. And now we've got it figured out. Got to go.
Oh, yeah. And he was being judged in his body by time, not other social institutions' ideas of time.
My mind was saying time was up.
And you knew there was no time. So how could that be?
Exactly. So it was very frustrating because it's kind of like, just now figured out what in the hell's going on, and now I can't hold life in my body.
Yeah.
Good.
Did you finish the teaching that you wanted to give to your girlfriend before you transitioned?
We'd hope to say yes, but they're not so sure that every concept was fully developed.
Right.
There's a whole dynamic that's missing, that's not been sort of synced up yet, but it will.
Mm-hmm.
In relation to her. In relation to her, Walter.
Yes.
So there
ask? Go
let
ahead,
me just
Bob.
Say this, James. So some of the things you wanted to impart to her, you feel didn't get received by her.
Or embraced, yes.
Right. Is she trying to embrace it now?
Well, apparently it's more about the money, Bob.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, James.
Did you ask her to go into business with me?
I suggested that it certainly would serve all parties.
Mm-hmm.
That you were had a good enough head on your shoulders that you could handle it, but that of course it'd be up to you, and
mm-hmm.
that it would sort of take the burden off her because she didn't know where she was, let alone what to do.
Right.
This is after Walter transitioned. After you transitioned. No, if he did it before you transitioned. So this is before he died, James. This was suggested.
Right.
That,
okay.
That you had a basic level head on your shoulders, and could help get through some of the muck that may come along with this completion.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking about the manuscript. You know that.
Right, right. Yeah, I know about that. Walter, if there was a special message that you had to give to me only that I could understand it, what would be that message?
Okay. When we were shrooming in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
the lights... that you
right.
could see, that you could touch, that you could feel.
Yeah.
They were coming together, and they were dividing and coming
yep.
together and dividing. But when they yep. all came together and it changed, that's when the light switch went on for you. And no one else on the planet would know that but you. And the feeling...
Exactly right.
And the feeling... that you had from anything that's this delicious, I'd like to sort of find if there's a larger dynamic here. If this is normal, this is the kind of normal that I'm intrigued by. And in that communication was the very thing that we were trying to get you to the place of engaging without any fear or reprisal, that you could then give yourself a break to decide what it was that you actually experienced. And that became this whole work from that point forward. It's changed everything.
That is correct. Yep, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Not bad for an old man, huh?
Right. Will there be other communications like that later?
Sure. 420 years ago was serving you well.
So, James, you mean by that other drug experiences or other just meaningful experiences?
Other meaningful experiences is the one that he's. Walter is referring to.
Would you do it? I mean, will you experience it again?
Yeah.
Has already.
You have already, James.
Right. That's right.
Okay, so we know this Walter knows what's going on. That's good. What more would you like to know, James?
What does he want? Not what does he want, but what would you think of Bob, myself, and Ion doing in the future?
You're asking Walter this.
Yes.
What would we think?
Yeah.
Well, you read the book.
Okay. No, I got it. That's funny. Good.
You mean the manuscript?
Bob, so.
He means
right.
The manuscript, yeah.
Well, what did it say? That you can come into this place of power and it won't be from Big Brother. That you can come into this place and it won't have to be doled out by some Senate subcommittee. There won't have to be alphabet people that watch over you in your place of delicious power. that you can have all experiences in this world and enjoy the bliss that is this place called living. That they don't have to hide everything, and something has to be, well, you're not, you're, it's above your pay grade to know these things. Well, that's
right.
Sort of it, isn't it? I mean, we don't want to be cheeky, but you know that.
Yes. Just confirming here. Just confirming.
Oh, well, oh good. Yeah. It's where your ion would start singing, looking for a city, we guess.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So Walter, what when James and I and Carolyn are talking to Ion on our cash flow show, are you watching, observing, or doing other things?
We don't do.
That's right. You just know.
Well, it's in the whole picture. See, Bob, this is very intriguing, and this was part of the big study. Many other studies have been done. Back to your LSD campaign and some of the other things that have paralleled sort of, we could sort of see into. All this has been, and we're not saying that everyone should jump in this rabbit hole of lifting your mind, you know, cutting your skull open to see if you have a mind. We're not suggesting that. But if you can find a way to have these experiences that bring you closer into your place of power, that's what the whole thing's been about since Itch.
Yeah. And that, this is Walter speaking.
Yeah, because that's what it's all been about. Well, we have this technology, we have this information, but we can't let it out because people don't know what they're supposed to know. And they'll run over themselves. We can't let them have cars because they'll run over themselves. So, therefore, we'll withhold power for cars so people won't run over themselves. Well, how does that work, you see? You can't. It gets to a point to where the mind won't contain it. Well, if the mind won't contain it, then they got nothing to lose. And when they got nothing to lose, then they have everything to gain. Well, once they start having everything to gain, then the conspiracy gets deconspiratored out into the open. So then it's no big deal. See, you're running around looking at the brush pile, finding the ashes of where it was burned, but you still can't figure out what they burned up. Well, what they burned up was what was consumed by the fire. Well, what was consumed by the fire? We, from our place now, see it as though the brush pile had never been burned. So every detail that was burned up in the ashes that are left in the charcoal rubbish of the brush pile, and for us, is as though it had just been stacked to be burned as brush. There's no pathway or delineation between experience. So it basically, some say, called it the divine loop. You remember that, James?
Mm-hmm.
The divine
circle.
Loop. Where,
yeah.
The circle. Well, it's more of a loop than a circle, because sort of it'll throw you for a loop.
Mm-hmm.
You recall, and that throwing you for a loop is the very loop that's coming without any outside impetus of anything. But you couldn't get there until you could see it the first time. You don't miss white sugar if you've never tasted it. You don't miss it.
Right.
You don't know it. But just because you get exposed to it doesn't mean that it has to overrun you. But to engage it is perfectly fine. No problem. It's okay. Well, white sugar is no different than anything else that you humans create. And the work, thoroughly explored, lays it out so that individual human creators can, quote, trip without anything to flip the trip. If you get it naturally, you don't have to come down from it.
Right.
And that was the dynamic, and if you could engage it, in engaging, then you can get a feel for it. Well, once you get a feel for it, it's about the way you all play with your antibiotics. You got to get enough that doesn't kill you, and then it can help you.
I see.
And that has to be embraced within the individual human as a parameter or gauging of how far you're going to go. Good. How far you want to go. Good. How far is it possible to go better?
Right.
How to engage a limitless limitation.
What was your most favorite experience while you were here in the physical?
Oh, gosh. From now, it would have had to been the flow. The flow from the one, the next. It would have been the flow. It would have been the up and the down, the up and the down. There wouldn't have been one that you could pinpoint and say, an aha moment. It was just the cohesive flow of the process. But I set up these rules and regulations like this roller coaster that the biggest hill was at first. And then as they got less and less and less and less, then it would wind down. And then you'd go back into the station. Well, that's where I made rules. And my mind would not usurp the rules that I made. So once I got to the end of the ride, I just now gotten ready to ride, and the ride was over. And there, and then I was in the rabbit hole, and I couldn't choose otherwise.
Hmm. In your timeline, Walter, did you spend a significant amount of time in China?
That would have been pre-Pat.
Pre-Pat?
Before Pat, his girlfriend in the mid-90s, early 90s. So that would be in the 80s. Is that before you were editor of Palm Springs Magazine?
That would have been just after that.
Yeah, because I didn't know that you went to China. I don't see that. Do you know that?
I meant in your timeline, I'm talking about, did you have a relationship with China in your consciousness somewhere from the experience that you may have had in China? Not necessarily when you were here.
Well, yes, and that would have been at the same time that Bob Sings is...
Yeah, between Palm Springs and Pat. That's 89, 90, 91, 92 period.
Yes.
You got a trip to China.
Certainly.
Yeah. I never talked to Walter about that. Anyways, you're talking about one thing, James, and then this other aspect of him going to China is what you didn't know, and that's not what you meant.
Right.
You're talking about the Chinese culture.
Yeah, he was very influenced by it.
What did you learn in China when you were there, Walter?
How qi affects the yin and balances the yang.
Isn't that what everybody learns over there?
Well,
they were given the opportunity to learn.
That and the incense are way groovy.
Did you say incense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You were well known in the 60s, and there were other people, even in your neighborhood, Abbie Hoffman, Jerry Rubin. They made the media for a while.
Yeah, it was a rough crowd, but we made it.
Yeah, so I was wondering, and we can include Andy Warhol in there, I was wondering, of those sort of publicly known people, who did you not appreciate that now you realize, well, maybe I could have learned a little bit from that person? And each would be more known people, not the neighborhood janitor or something. I'm talking about of the famous people. I mean, in my experience with you, Walter, you had disdain for most, Andy Warhol and everybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, somebody that had the genuine belief that the only reason they were an artist was because it was things that shouldn't have been put on a canvas. It just seems sort of a slap in the face, and yet they'd give any price for their work.
Okay, that's Warhol. That's a critique of Warhol. But who is it of the known people that you failed to, you might have learned something, and even though you disdained them, maybe that was not the right approach to them?
Michael Milliken.
Yeah, that's in the 80s. You had disdain for him, but now you can see that you could have learned something from him.
Certainly.
That's interesting. And another MM is Marshall McLuhan. Did you get a deeper understanding of McLuhan later?
Well, as much as Marshall did, yeah.
So Ed,
I'm in the soup together now. So when you get in the same pot of soup, it cleans up a whole lot of queries.
Yeah, are you talking about the soup in the non-physical or the soup we're in the physical here?
Soup in non-physical.
Oh, okay. Ed, you're going to have to put up here. Let's have you ask some questions. This must be something that you're interested in asking about.
Okay, Walter.
Share our shrooms with you, Ed.
And thanks for the recipe of that 40-day drugs. I'm sure a lot of people were interested in that. But, Walter, what did you mean on September 11, 2001, when you said Bob was right, and then later you said, what an idiot?
Well, of course. He spent his whole life verifying, vindicating, validating every dynamic of every human creative consciousness, and then went right back into the end of it to say, oh, never mind. Every time he'd get a tiger by the tail, he'd say, I don't have a tiger by the tail. I don't know what a tiger is, and I don't have a tail, and I can't get it. And it's like, how idiotic to get this far down it to say, oh, sorry.
Never mind. I'm sorry I brought it up.
How idiotic could it be that that could be the way you process good, wholesome intelligence? Pretty much just like that.
Does that make any sense to you, Ed?
It did indeed. And, Walter, when you were in Tucson, how'd you spend your time? Who'd you meet out there? Because that must have been a big jump from New York City.
To where, Ed?
Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
It was a whole new realm of well, I don't know, there's a word, but it may not be so kind, but the folks that were tapped into this Sedona business and the crystal licking,
yeah,
that whole world, they sort of gathered there. And there had to be something going on because that's where every UFO was landing. That's where every alien insight was showing up. That's where anyone could see anything that was outside of reality, and who cared who was there. And it was almost back to the brawl burners where everybody fit in.
You mean everybody fit into the Sedona meme?
Yes.
And that puzzled you?
No, it was what attracted us there.
Ah.
So no, it was not very different than the East Village, no.
And who did you meet there? Who did you socialize with?
Gosh, a lot of the... There were some what you call fat cats that were there, because you see the lots of architects and business people and folks that kind of got bigger than themselves, they could fit in there and just get them a nice adobe and be happy.
Yeah, I know that. That sounds familiar for that era to me.
Mm-hmm. Lots of very intelligent, artfully, skillfully put together people could go and just sort of let their hair down comfortably. And it was certainly well embraced.
Did you meet any Native people, Native Americans, while you were there?
You are, say it again now.
While you were in Arizona, did you socialize with any Native Americans?
Certainly. Couldn't help but. Are you kidding? The shaman had the best peyote.
And, Walter, from your perspective, where you are now, could you give us some insight into the Hollywood crowd you were trying to do business with?
Well, the insight was that it was a silly, fruitless dichotomy of uppers and downers and overs and unders, to the point that had I broken through that, it would have just made a mess. They would have bastardized every good intention of expression that we were trying to convey and make it some bad Al Pacino movie.
That makes sense. You agree with that, James?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And you were, Walter, you were bothered by that. You believed that you had a message that you wanted to be.
Well, of course. And not be twisted around into some heretic version of the dogma of the moment.
Yeah. What's another question, Ed?
Well, is there anything in Hollywood now that's approaching what you would like to see to maybe bring people into their own power?
Well, the Cameron age is not bad. They missed it, of course, obviously. But this Avatarian world is delicious. I know that very well. But they ended up making it all be about the rules and the regulations. Even then, if they could have just stayed in Pandora's labyrinth, it certainly would have been more refreshing than having the disdain of raping and pillaging a surreal world, which isn't surreal except from the notion of how you approach it.
Hey, James, that's exactly yeah. Walter. He would take whatever was happening and say, they screwed it up.
Of course.
That's Walter we're talking to. Yeah, he'd take whatever was happening, like Avatar. Did you hear that, James?
Yep.
Yeah, they yep. fucked it up again.
Right. That's right.
Carry on, Ed. Keep going.
Well, Walter, you said that mind control can be used positively and negatively. So how can it mind control be used now in a way that would benefit society?
Well, the issue we were trying to bring up is that who controls it? You see, if you can control your own mind, that's mind control too. Well, that's good. But if it's someone else controlling your mind, then that would not be you. Then the best you can get is what the least they can hope for.
Yeah, your quality of mind controller. What you got to get the best mind controller that is the one who would maybe be forced to look like, present that he's controlling you, but actually secretly let you have the freedom to control your own mind.
Well, but if you have mind control and you're the controller, that's positive. If you have mind control where someone else is the lowest bidder, that may not serve you so well, because that limits.
So is there any mind control going on today, Walter?
Of course.
And is it effective?
Well, of course.
And that would be for individuals who have given up the control of their own minds. Is that what you're saying?
Your first part was a bit broken.
Okay.
Do it again, Ed, just what you said.
Well, you say that mind control is happening today. And if we take that in a negative sense, do you mean that individuals who have given up the control of their own minds are being affected by the negative mind control?
Yes, that's why you have Charmin bathroom tissue in your water closets. So the best you're going to get is the worst Charmin can provide for you.
What, it seems like early in your life you had experience with ETs. And could you explain, I think you had said one time that the UFO phenomenon was part of the government mind control. What did you mean by that?
What the meaning of it was is that the government had to tell you what you were experiencing. The only thing that could be embraced is what the government cleared for you to know. That was the issue. And why was it that the government had to say what you experienced and what you didn't, what it was and what it wasn't? That was the issue. Because most of that was real, okay? and it was real for me, and I didn't require the government to tell me what I had experienced for my own self, how it was supposed to fit into their Pandora's box, sealed or otherwise, of the experience that I was engaging myself.
And did you feel that you had an effect with your hypnosis skills?
And what's the question?
Well, when you learned hypnosis, I'm assuming that your purpose in using that was to help other individuals. Did you feel that you were effective with your hypnosis in helping others?
Well, no. What that was about was to peeling the onions conundrum. Sometimes when you can go into the inner psyche, sometimes new light switches for the individuals, the outcome of that was very, very pleasant for them. It got them to a place, a good place, where they had their control again. And when that was positive, it was very positive. When it was not positive, it was a bit confounding.
And what are we talking about? When did this happen? Ed?
Oh, I don't know. Walter, can you tell us when it happened?
Well, it was a developed process, but it was when everything got to be too after, I guess it would have been after we left the village. It would have mostly been in Arizona, later in Arizona.
And I missed a bit of it. This was a good time? Is that what we're talking about?
Sure.
What was he talking about, Ed?
Did
you get that?
About these use of hypnosis.
Oh.
So, Walter, could you give us an idea of what's in your diaries?
James knows.
Okay.
I mean, if we give it to you now, what's the point of him getting it?
Exactly. Got to give me something to look forward to next month.
We need a treasure hunt.
If he's going to fuck it up, we might as well give him a good chance.
And, you know, the other crusade, could you give us a hint? What did really happen in the 60s?
Well, it was, we're not quite sure you know what you're asking. What really did happen in the 60s? You mean the way it was set up, the way that the government was aligned to control every dynamic that was on the leading edge of creation? Or are you talking about specifically of how it unfolded for me? Or are you talking about how the media then became so proactive that if it could get through the Times, New York, that is, then it would be acceptable, and if not, then the Post had to clean it up, as in Washington. Is that what you mean, or from what?
So we're presented with a view of the 60s. So what is the reality behind that? In other words, what we're presented with has been filtered.
Of course. That was the first, as we say it, it was the first time that humans actually were very close to having pure access to their own power through whatever meme or place of imbibing anything. It was the closest that it come to having a full-blown, passionate mind that could embrace every dynamic outside of what was said as appropriate or inappropriate.
And is there an opportunity for that to happen now?
Oh, of course. It's happening by default now.
By default, yeah. Okay, I have a question, Ed. Walter told me that in around 1968 that some bureaucrat in the Mellon Empire, at the family reunions or in some situation, some lawyer, accountant, or somebody, told Walter that they were going to put Nixon in the White House, create a depression, and make it a privilege to have a job. Walter, could you tell us the environment around, what are the circumstances, or how, when did this happen, and who was the person who told you?
Well, it was the liaison for Armstrong Cooper.
Armstrong Cooper?
The law firm that was basically, it was a lawyer, but it was a glorified paralegal that knew this information was coming because apparently that the Americans didn't appreciate all this freedom and all this delicious
what you were just talking about.
Yes, and that if we had it in such a way that you'd figure it out real quick, you'd find out real quick how it's going to go.
Wait, I'm not sure what that sentence means. You're saying if we what about what? If you knew what you experienced with that person, paralegal?
No, all they're saying, all the paralegal was saying from that law firm, okay?
Yeah.
All they were saying was that they're fixing to come and exchange and that the American people don't appreciate all these freedoms that they forced to be free. So you get it back to a place where they'll be tickled to death to enjoy a minimum wage so that they basically are whipped into shape.
So this paralegal was not trying to control the people. He said the law firm, the information was about people who could do it. We're going to teach the Americans a lesson so that they could appreciate what they have.
These freedoms that they've forced. If you got so much time that you can march on Washington, we'll make it to where you won't have time to do anything.
And I thought you were getting at that the paralegal had a good motive in doing this. No, I guess it doesn't. That sounds different now the way you say it there. So why the people that the paralegal was talking about, why did they want to punish Americans?
When we told you that originally, Bob, what did you think we meant?
When did that happen? No. Are you talking about...
When did you ask the question?
Okay, yeah, you're talking about within this reading right now.
No. Originally, when we told you that...
No, this is Ion speaking now. I'm addressing Walter, but you're Ion speaking now, right?
No, Bob.
Okay, this is Walter. Walter told me something. You, Walter, told me something? When?
Bob.
Come on.
Bob. Now, wait a second. This isn't...
You said when we. Who's the we? You're Walter, and when did Walter tell me? What did he tell me? Are you talking about this anecdote?
What did you ask, Bob?
About what did the...
No. What did you ask? You followed the statement, and you said, Walter, when you told me that Mellon family gave information that we, Walter, had information that we were going to put Nixon in the White House in 1968, September the 4th, 1968, that Nixon was going to be put in the White House. The Mellon family told me, and I told you, that they were going to make the Americans glad to have a job. Is that not what you asked?
Yeah, I'm asking about that, and when you bring...
Now you're asking when that was?
No. I was... Okay, just start over again. Here, look. September... What, you're saying September 4th is when Walter was told that?
Yeah.
Okay, that's 2 months before the election. Okay, that's appropriate, because in my sense of Walter's chronology, he was with Peggy and the Mellons, probably in 68, on getting ready to go to Arizona.
Correct.
And he'd left East Village other, and that makes sense. So the point is that was said, and then what you were just saying 5 minutes ago, Walter, it was like this paralegal saying, these Americans don't realize the freedoms they have, so we're going to take them away so they realize their freedoms.
that's what the Mellon family made so. And that's exactly how it happened.
Yeah, but then you bring up they're protesting, and the Mellons don't like that they have time to protest.
If they've got time to run around and burn their brassieres, they've got too much time. If they'd been productive, they wouldn't have had all this issue of free everything, and they'd have been busy making a way for themselves. So if that's too free, then pull it back, and when it's pulled back, then they'll get to a position from the Mellons' perspective.
Yeah.
They ought to be thankful that they're able to be able to go march, and instead they got where they were able to march and then do anything crazy thing they wanted. Wonderful. But we're going to put it in a position where they get back in the field and quit bellyaching about how free they are.
So the Mellons, that was their agenda. They certainly didn't.
It was.
And they didn't get that in the long run.
Well, ask James. He seems to preach about that a great deal these days.
Okay, Walter, you're saying they did get that, but they were doing it for the Americans' own good, and would the Mellons think that they got...
Not so much.
All right, so I get a negative aspect. See, I thought it was a slight glimmer there that the Mellons knew that people would not come into their power unless they had this experience.
Well, but they were already so free they could do me or have anything that they wanted to. Remember the flower children? They already had that.
Good
enough.
This is the moment you were talking about in the 60s. They almost got it as a culture, and the Mellons frustrated that.
Well, they said, fine, you're not powerful enough to control your own reality, so we'll control it for you.
Walter, you would say that was unfortunate that Mellons did that.
And knew in advance that it was going to happen, and it did.
Well, how are the Mellons doing today?
Almost invisible.
Right, and not in the position to do what they did with Nixon now.
With all their own shorts, let alone run their bank.
Right, so they're now they're subject to someone else saying, well, these Mellons don't take their own power, so we're going to show them. They got to get back on the plantation and work for us, the new overseers, the new Mellons, in terms of...
Okay. You mean Bank of New York?
Did you say Bank of New York?
Yes.
Yeah. It's called the Mellon Bank of New York, isn't it?
It is, but there ain't no Mellon left.
Right. Okay, so this paralegal said that, and that did happen, and so you, knowing what happened as the 70s unfolded, Walter... You knew that what you were told was true, and did that bother you?
No, it was no different than everything else. They'd try to control every dynamic of creation,
right,
par excellence. So you start to notice that there's a theme going on here.
Yeah. Okay, Ed, back to you. I wanted to ask that. You got some other questions?
No, how about you, James? You have some questions?
I pretty much got it cleared up now.
Well, wonderful. We want you to know how much we appreciate you actually engaging our opinion. It's very, very comforting that it was all not for naught.
And yet, this is Walter talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then I would like to bring you Ion in. And we're going to discuss you, Walter, in the third person.
Oh, goody.
Okay. Okay, Ion, you're back? You're here?
Yes.
What would you say about Walter's life that we didn't bring out through this questioning of Walter himself?
The constant questioning. Every question, every answer was questioned. Every question was answered and then questioned. Every question was in question because the answer couldn't be the question because the question was the answer and the answer was the question. And every time it got someplace that was meaningful or fruitful, he went right into undoing it.
Now that sounds like me.
Yes, and he called you an idiot. So I guess y'all were in the same peas in the same pod, huh?
Yeah, it's like that old thing. Yeah, the old truism that when you see something in someone else that is you, you don't see it in yourself. You see the other person, you criticize that person for having it, but you're actually seeing something in yourself in the other person, right?
And that makes a limitation. And the only one that limits is you, not them. It limits you.
Yeah.
Good. That's good. And it, yeah, okay.
Hey, go ahead, Anna. You started right off. Anna, take off. Take it away.
Oh, great fun. We're trying to answer the questions that are being laid out. That was the main one.
Yeah, that's good.
And another dynamic would be the fruitful experience that planet Earth living provides. There was so much of Walter that was trying to create this degree or level of escapism that she never found the opportunity to enjoy the bright spots that were here.
Right.
It was always some big hootie-hootie-hoo thing of every time, there that went. I knew they'd mess that up. can't get that right. I knew that was going to make me sick. I knew this was going to end in tears. is that regret I smell on you? you see. So every time you get it figured out, then you undo what you figured out.
Yeah, so in a way, he was doing the, we're not going to have that, but I do, but it didn't work for him.
It wasn't that way. It wasn't really that way. It was that he would then seek out and show them how they messed it up.
That's true.
Don't do that. You don't do that. You don't give it that much attention, Bob.
Yeah.
Slow. And that's okay, because we love you. There's no problem. And you're doing what you are where you are, and it's delicious. No issue. But the parallel is that it was personal for Walter.
Yeah.
And not personal for you.
Okay, that is now being an orphan had set that up in him to take it personally?
Well, everything for him was personal.
But does it become from the meme and association with the concept of being an orphan?
It can be developed that way, but you can blame it on the rain if you'd like.
No, I'm just thinking that as a young boy, the wound that he thought he had as an orphan set up this sort of, I'm not going to have any good times.
Well, there are the only good time I can have is when I slip past what the Politburet says.
Right.
Engage.
The illicit.
Anything outside of okay, that's the only thing that could bring joy.
So he was always looking for the outside fringe stuff to hang out in.
Yeah, because then that could assert an opinion. And he certainly had an opinion about everything.
Yeah, so that, he would... He would only enjoy himself in the outside-the-box situation, but part of enjoying himself would be to criticize what was going on, how they fucked up the outside perfectly.
And getting what he could get away with, figure out beyond it.
That makes sense, James, doesn't it?
Very much so, yeah.
That sums it up there. Is Walter in the guff?
Yes.
Did he go there right away?
No.
He didn't hurry, but how you can go through the judgment process before you go into the guff. Did he do that in the non-physical, judging himself?
Never.
Did he do it while he was in the physical?
Mostly, yes. And then the culmination of that is when you lay that body down.
Right. So he... Whatever judgment level you go through on yourself in the non-physical, it happened pretty quickly for him. So you get to the guff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
know what you mean when you say pretty quickly, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just that there are people who are still judging themselves and they haven't gone to the guff yet.
Well, that happens more on a daily basis than an end of meat sack basis.
Yeah, in the physical that happens.
Sure.
But you have described in our sessions about what happens after you pass on. You have
pass
described
on.
This.
We love those words. That's so much fun. Pass on.
Yeah. No, it's
slide into the inky, misty darkness. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't want to say transition all the time, but I don't want to
You're
say
right.
die.
That's a nice word. We like pass on. Maybe pass up. You pass up your meat sack. Well, when I passed up my meat sack, then I have this experience. That's good. That's good. That's
okay, we'll use that. Well, Walter passed up. So
passed up. That's right.
So this judgment that people do, usually on the way to the Gulf or before they get to the Gulf, Walter didn't do much of that.
Well, for the experience, it was what caused him to transition anyway.
It was his path of joy to do that.
Yeah, he was tired of fussing about. He was tired of fussing, worrying about fussing and worrying.
Right. Through a friend in May 2008, Walter said that he regretted his personal relationships with his family and that. Is there anything you'd say about that?
Well, that's in the meat sack. There is no regret.
When he's in the physical. I mean, in the non-physical, there's no regret.
There is no regret.
Okay, so Ed, James, you got a question for Ion.
Ion, does Walter, I think we've asked this before, but is Walter influenced the radio broadcast live, or does he influence it more when we're off the air?
Well, it depends. You have been drawing a great deal of wonderful guests on your show. So, now we're not talking about all media. We're talking about your media, correct?
Correct. Yeah, his show.
James's show.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, we're catching Bob's disease, so we...
No, you're talking about James's castle and all the guests he has.
Yes, that's the one. That what you want to know about James?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Then the interesting, engaging folks that just sort of find you, and you don't even have to really dig them out much anymore. They come out of the woodwork to get to you. Well, that's because of your intention. So if that's the case, then yes, Walter is by imbuing within his place of knowing your interaction with what's a fun guest or a fun show that you would like to embrace, then yes, that would be in the live radio activity. But if it's you then deciding and behind the scenes of what would be the hot topic of just what would be just outside the TMZ of that would be fun, that is infected more from the off-air world of your developing the concepts that you would like to engage in your cash flow experience.
Right.
So what we're saying in the long way, the short version is a little bit of both.
Walter influences both.
A little bit, yes.
Well, influencing the range of themes that James thinks about that he's going to present, that's one thing. What's the different? What's not that's influencing ratio? You know, I don't
well,
think...
to get the best out of the guest.
Yes. Walter helps James questioning.
Sure, because... You get James on the air, and he don't know nothing about nothing. Okay, he knows it all, really, really. But he lays it out and lets them present it, and then as they present it, then he engages. So he keeps his dog to the side and allows them to engage, and doesn't have a huge big pushing against of it. He just sort of lets it flow. Well, in that letting it flow, that's when much more of the Paul Harvey version of the story can be laid out.
And Walter's part of James stepping aside.
Assisting that process.
Yeah, I see.
And work out the details, yeah. He doesn't take it on and say, no, you're not this, and yeah. He doesn't do that. He just sort of lets it flow from the big picture.
Yeah.
And out of the big picture, he actually ends up with more information. Because his guest... don't feel threatened by James.
Yeah. Okay.
They don't feel like that he's trying to piss in their Wheaties.
Okay, Ed, do you have a final question?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Ion. Thank you, James.
You got one more question?
Oh yeah, one more. You got to throw the
ball. I do have a question.
And
I want to know. I don't know exactly how to phrase it, but I was considering writing maybe a $700,000 check and depositing it to my account. What can I expect if I do that? What can I expect from the bank if I do that?
Well, you've had some first-hand experience now from some folks that have taken that on, but basically you'll have a real engaging conversation with your banker, and they'll, if you get the right teller, they'll just hand you a deposit slip.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping for.
And if they do that, then in about a day, you're going to get a phone call, and the phone call is going to be your local banker and say, "Hey, Ed, how you doing? How's your mom or Nim?" and all that kind of business. Well, we got a question here. There seems to be an issue. We have a deposit that's drawn on this bank on your account, and we wanted to know if you had another transfer coming through or if something was going to happen or go on, or did you want to take it out of this account or that account so that these funds would be available to post into your account. And you'd say, no, I already have the money in my account. And they'd say, oh, you do? And they'd say, yes, I made a deposit. Oh, and they said, well, that's the deposit, this instrument that you deposited into the fiduciary that you want us to clear into your account. Right. Well, that money hasn't cleared yet. I understand, but I have a receipt that gave me a deposit slip. And that's a receipt. And I can give you the number off of it. Hold on, I've got it right here. 643-218-96441. And go, yeah. And they go, yeah, we have that. That's a registered deposit. But the check that you deposited is drawn on your account and to be deposited into your account. And you go, yes, what's the problem with that? Your job is not to judge the deposit. Your job is to receive the deposit. Now, if you're saying that my deposit that I made is no good, then return it. And if they return it, then they have a problem with the FDIC because you have a receipt where you made the deposit for $750,000. Okay. Or ever what amount it is, it makes no difference. So then you've basically undone the system. And they can't allow that. All right, now if they process it and put it in your account and then charge your account, at the end of the month, you're not going to notice any difference. Oh, maybe a little bit of interest because they ain't paying nothing anymore, but a 20 cents interest, which is no problem, and don't say a word. But if they do that, then guess what happens? Their bank's nightly checkup with the Federal Reserve has been increased. So therefore, they have to cover that debenture because, see, you see deposits in your account as an asset, but the banker man sees that as a liability, and it raises the nightly debt structure for what they have to hold on reserve in their banking system. And if they're ahead, they make money, and if they're short, they have to borrow money from the Federal Reserve to check up. That's just fiduciary responsibility. So if they could have let that go through, then there's this huge bump, and it changes the size bank that they are. And that's a problem because it's already weighing down to a very critical position. So either way it goes, either it forces the system and makes that bank in jeopardy, and or it points out for you that this is actually, there's not even a straw boss left to really manage this thing called the economy. And if, or you may get one of these meetings where they say, sorry, you have to have an FDIC account. And you say, I do. They say, no, you have to have an FDIC number. And they say, I do. And they say, well, what is that number? And you just point to the bottom of your check with the routing number and the account number that's on your instrument. And they go, no, that's not an FDIC account. And you say, what? You mean that my deposits are not insured by the FDIC using these numbers on the bottom of my check? I'm going to call Diane Sawyer. Either way you go, Houston, there's a problem. And they go, no, Ed, you're just being silly. You can't do this. Yeah, they said they're having money troubles, and I want to do my part. And they said, well, depositing money in your own account doesn't help that. Oh, so where did the TARP money come from? Did they have that in account, and they wrote a check out of their account to pay the TARP? No, they didn't even vote on that money. They voted on the TARP, but they didn't vote on the funding. So the government can't just indiscriminately print money, can they? You see? So either way you go, it points to the obvious. So then you're going to get some little tail, and they may even give you the number, or you'd say, okay, I'll call the FDIC. I know her, and I'll get to the bottom of this. Well, then they may say, wait, let me see if I can help you. Because then guess what? If they get in a position where they stop receiving deposits, the FDIC insurance ain't going to help them. Because then they will have now, by virtue of how they issued their charter was issued to them to become a bank anyway, calls the shares of the bank themselves into question. You've heard about it, the stories about a run on the bank.
Yes.
Well, when they can't accept a check or clear funds, or they can't accept a deposit, then it's insolvent. Well, when it's insolvent, they broke their Regulation D for their charter that was laid out for their bank when they became a bank in the FDIC or the SPIC system. Otherwise, they're just, you know, you're on your own. That doesn't work either. You mean these greenbacks we're putting in here aren't any good? Nope. Well, no, see, Mr. Ed, you don't understand. Did you not read your signature card when you opened up your account? And you go, yes, they told me that I signed this, and if I have an instrument that comes through, they'll match up the signatures. And they laugh, and they go, no. We don't look up no signatures. What it actually says is that if you put money in this bank, it's no longer your money, it's our money. And if you be kind and you follow every rule and regulation, then we'll allow you access to your money if we think it's okay. That's how if you get crossways, they can seize your account. They can say you didn't pay the appropriate amount of tax. They can FIFA lien you. That's the only way they have the power to be able to encroach on your relationship with the bank, which has nothing to do with the government anyway. Now, is that more than you banked on, or does that sort of explain it a little easier for you?
That's just right.
That's good.
Good. And see, the issue is, either way, they can't explain it.
Yeah.
Either way, it's a problem. And so when we announced that this would be a great big fun thing to do, only from an individual human creator that decided it was in the best path, fastest path to their joy to experience that, then they could find out, don't believe us, we just little non-physical. Engage it to see if you want to find out for yourself.
Hey, Ed, you
yes.
should, you definitely need to bring someone to tape this, or tape it yourself without them knowing.
Nah, I don't even have to do that. You can go straight on. I mean, that's not a problem.
Yeah, but it'd be nice to have a tape so he proved that he did it.
But he knows he did it, and they'll know he did it. That's enough. But you can please yourself. It's no problem. Because it's not to get into a fight, see?
Mm-hmm.
You were just trying to help out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really not about exposing anything. You just, hey, I'm a good old citizen. And I like Obama, and he's done nothing wrong to me, and I got my little looky box, and people look at what I say on my little looky box, and they appreciate what I do, and they give me a little money, just a dab here and there, and I appreciate them giving me a little money, and that's all nice. I try to provide things for them to play with and engage and choose what they like, and I was just trying to give y'all a hand because I appreciate this opportunity, living this delicious life. I enjoy it, so I want to do my part.
So can I say I'm writing my own stimulus package?
Sorry?
Could I say that I'm writing my own stimulus package?
No, because then that would be yours. No, no. The reason to do it would be to help out, to help out the government. You're just doing your part. Because if you make a deposit for a large sum into your account, then that increases M1.
Right.
And if I increase M1, then money is increased. Well, if money is increased, then that'll help again a deficit. Because now there's more money. Because you're going to take my money right back out once I put it in. Well, when you take it right back out, it still increased the whole. That's what M1 is. Now, it used to be that that was gauged and based on the gross national product, which is the total value of all goods and services produced in a country or an economy within a year. And when they got off the gold standard, M1 can't be more than the GMP. And when you start noticing that it is, and that's already been clearly obvious when people are losing more than they had, how do you lose more than you got? That's why your buddy Alan Greenspan said that I was alive during the Great Depression, and what's coming right now is the Greater Depression. Because in the Great Depression, people lost everything they had. Now people's losing things they didn't even have. They're losing more than they had. Why do you lose more than you have?
Well, is more money than is evidence of parallel worlds?
No, it is not. Okay. More money than is a bad economic foundation of the power of a marvelous creator. Do not be surprised when we tell you there are human creators walking on the earth from this plane, in this plane, in this realm of reality, who individually, singularly, have individually more money than is. And you go, that's not possible. And we go, exactly. But yet, they are. Well, how can you say that? Well, because their passbook savings account says that. And when you start uncovering that, all of a sudden, it turns out church. And if you notice in the flow of what your little, what do they call them now, Bob? Your TV body?
Yeah.
They're being very careful not to say anything out. So they'll have other issues. They'll have law bombs in New York City. They'll have trains and then earthquakes and shaky bakey. They'll have every news story in the world except when it all starts crumbling down, almost to the degree that they'll flip it back and go, wait a second, how could the Dow Jones Industrial Average fall more than 1,000 points in 30 minutes? Oh, somebody punched a B instead of an M. Well, if that's the case, guess what? No one would have any confidence in the buying and selling of Dow Jones. No one would participate in the New York Stock Exchange. You wouldn't go to the doctor who was supposed to give you this much of a prescription medication and he gives you a billion times more than he's supposed to have been a million milligrams, gives you a billion grams. You wouldn't go back to that doctor. You wouldn't go back. Oh, it was just a little snafu, just a little typo. Well, a whole lot of people made a whole lot of money checks and lost a whole lot of money checks just from that very little, oops, never mind. You can't, it doesn't work that way. when those orders are scheduled and put in, they are crossed, recrossed, cross-checked, and then computer programs are put into place to cover those longs and shorts. Okay? So it can't be that. You can call it something else, but it can't be that. Now, this isn't new. This has happened. If you'll go back to the days of Nations Bank and the Railroad Bank and FU National Bank, which is First Union, they had to merge because one day they accidentally lost $1 billion. Whoops. Sorry. And now you got, and out of that you ended up with Bank of America. Just that easy. Easy speezy.
So in this recent Dow thing with the supposedly the button was pushed, what actually happened to cause this devaluation?
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's a great question. Now, you can look on your faithful member. It's sort of laid out on your little dupes of hazard.
Dupes and non-physical, yeah.
Yeah, it's laid out there. But even outside of that, it was just that the computer program saw the shorts, and when it recognized the shorts, the buys, they said it was an anomaly with a buy order. Well, it was. And that buy order then was already in place. So it wasn't putting in a B rather than an M. It was, some called it a BM. Some people, many people's bowels was moved on that day, I can assure you that. But beyond that, the point was the computer had already set up and calculated the sales. So when this order was instigated, it automatically set what was going to happen anyway. So they pulled it back to say, oops, sorry, hit the wrong button. Make it so, but they didn't go back and say, if it was a mistake, they didn't go back and say, everything from this point that moved in the programs that were activated because of this button, make it back to where it was. Mm-hmm. Everything stops, we clean this up, we fix it, it will be as though it never happened. Mm-hmm. If your bank made an accounting error, they would go back in time and say, okay, so this is what really took place, so from this point forward, we'll make it right. But they didn't do that. They just said, oops.
Clean up on aisle five.
Because, see.
What'd you say, Ed? What'd you say?
Clean up on aisle five.
Oh, is that what you said?
Because, see, at the end of the day, all accounts have to be settled. So somebody had to settle that. Well, the little goober that hit the B instead of the M, he'd have to settle that. And whoever he was trading for would have been responsible for that. They didn't. That still has to be. Because vast sums were paid out on the shorts that were banked on that happening. Now, the real deal has to come back with Greece and with Portugal and these countries fixing to start filing Chapter 9. Well, they don't have a Chapter 9, but in the U.S., that's what they call it. It's when a municipality files for insolvency.
Hey, Ion, just a second. Are you saying that this happened because the people were preparing, they were getting their money before Greece collapsed everything? Is that you saying?
Yes.
So this was intentionally, this was people getting their money before it all crashed?
Correct.
Okay. And can you say who initiated and saw that it was coming and did it?
Human creators.
You don't want to name them.
Well, it was human.
I mean, how many?
It really was.
What?
It really was. It was the human creator.
It wasn't a committee saying, uh-oh, that Greece is going.
No. They ain't that smart. If they're smart, they'd already worked it out beforehand.
It's the smart human. The smart human creators did it, not the committee.
Right. Yeah.
Gotcha.
If because they already give a bridge loan for Greece, which we've laid out way before it was taking place,
said
that it wouldn't last long, and now they're saying the loan's not going to go through. We hoped for the best, but we had a little this and a little
okay,
that.
Okay, so I distracted that. I brought in that side issue. Got back to what you were sort of concluding with.
That this is just nothing other than human creators reacting to creation by default.
The creation by default begins with the tarp?
Well, it's even further than that.
Yeah. You're talking about the fake solution the past year.
Yeah, and then now we, of course, give James and Bob the credit for crashing the national economy, but now they've saved it, so we give them credit for
saving
the problem and straightening it out all at the same time, so that's good.
But then another client of Ion caused this.
Okay.
I don't know if we should go into that, right? That's
not necessary.
Yeah.
Not required.
No, but one of the clients of Ion was a smart human creator.
Well, then you're saying you're not going into it, and then you jump right into it, so decide.
Well, I'm not naming it.
Which way do you want, you know?
It was me. I did it. I was a smart creator.
If you lay out the dynamic, then you can explain to the SEC how you was able to gain that information. Good.
Fine.
Well, for Martha Stewart either, but go right ahead. It's all right. Please, your happy damn self, Walt.
Okay. Back to what you were pointing to say, or maybe you're finished.
Okay. Now, if information is knowledge, know, to know, okay, and it's done from a ledgered standpoint, knowledge can be available to all human creators, and you can know in advance if there's no time. So you actually know what to do, when to do, and how to do, and can gain precipitously all day, every day. You can know that it's going to be a hard winter and know that the orange juice crop's not going to do well and know that pork bellies are going to go up and know that corn's going to be a bumper crop, so it's going to be sold low. You can know all that because there's no time. And if engagement with us allows you that ability and capacity, then you'd be smart as Warren Buffett in about 2.3 seconds, wouldn't you?
Yep.
You could pick up a shell, Berkshire Hathaway, and you could have a little thing and start seeing what's happening and adjusting accordingly and get it on a big program. And the next thing you know, your A shares of Berkshire Hathaway get you through a lot of hard days, especially when it was 28 cents a share.
Right. So, James, we caused the crash, but if you remember, during the crash and after, I kept saying, just keep typing, and that was what's caused the recovery. People kept typing.
That's right.
Yeah. So we crashed it and then we solved it. But now a new dimension has come in.
Yes.
Ion. Ion has become the new dimension.
No, it's just bringing human creators back into their creating capacity. That's all.
Okay, very good. I think it's time to go to the beach, Ed.
Sounds good. It's a beach day.
Every day is beach day here.
Your farm is going crazy today.
Oh, you noticed?
Yeah. Hey! If you'd have put a little more Vestal Goodman on there to start with, it would have moved long ago. That's the secret to living, Vestal, the happy Goodman. That'll do
right.
It for you.
So what happened, Ed? You mean you got many hits or a glitch happened?
No, you were asking that. Sorry.
No, yeah, Ed. Ed.
Go
well,
ahead,
you said
I,
something
what,
happened. What happened today? We'll get to it. What happened today, Ed?
No, I mean, I was responding to what Ian said. So
you said he noticed. Ed, we want to find out what... You go, oh, you notice Ion. What did he notice? You know what he noticed. What is it?
Well, ask him what he said. I noticed
what
he said.
That?
He said the site's going crazy or something like that.
And what's he referring to?
Traffic.
You're going to need a truck. Okay,
Ed. Ed, did you know there was a lot of traffic at your site before we start doing this 3-4 hour session?
No, I didn't, because I've been listening to the session.
Oh, okay. So when Ion says, what's going on there, you didn't know what Ion was referring to.
Actually, I thought he was referring to the number of posts that we put up, because we put up new posts today.
Okay, well, you go,
That's increased crazily as well, because that's where posts come from, are people visiting the site.
No. Posts are what Ed puts up.
No. Post or what they respond to. If he put posts up that weren't being fruitful, new posts that weren't being fruitful, his traffic would have way declined. But because of these posts that he's doing and because of this accelerated position, that's what's causing his little stars to go crazy. And the span and length of time they're spending on the site is becoming voluminous.
Okay, Ed.
Well put together.
Yeah, I hear what Ion's saying. Now, I want to go back to that point. Ion says, your site, a lot of just says something, it's crazy, crazy. And you go, oh, you noticed. Now, Ed, to me, the tone of your voice means that you knew something had already been happening, and you're saying, oh, you noticed that too, Ion. But you're telling me that the statement, oh, you noticed, Ion, meant something else. So I'm trying to find out what you meant at that moment.
Well, excuse me, but I thought that was a conversation between Ion and I.
That's right. That's right.
Well, no, you got listeners. It's not between you two. We're part of this show.
We may have listeners, but it was a conversation between Ion and I.
Okay, so what? There ain't no you and there ain't no Ion. We're all one.
Well, if that's true, Bob, then hell, you ought to know.
No, I don't. That's why the one wants to know. What, Ed, what's going on? So you don't know what Ion's referring to. That's what I've gleaned right now.
Well, he sort of explained it. He was talking about the number of posts and the number of stars, which is the number of people who are visiting the site.
But you did not know that was happening because you were talking to us for 4 hours.
That's what
or
I
more.
Said. I didn't know.
Yeah. Okay, so now you know, and you're going to check out and see if Ion's correct.
I'm looking at it right now.
And what do you see?
I see what Google shows me.
And what are they showing?
Well, what they're showing is what Google wants to show me. It may not be what Ion's seeing, which is probably the truth.
Okay. We can't know.
Good.
Unless we got Ion.
There you go.
Well, no. It's up to the human creator. Because, yeah. See, what Ed heard us say from probably about the beginning was a real good idea is to keep your ideas to yourself until they're fully developed. Don't rush it. You don't have to, just because you got pretty panties don't mean you have to go running around showing everybody. It'll unfold itself. It's all right. But just a little validation here and there is always intriguing because it's like, aha, this does feel pretty good. I do like the way this is going. This does feel sort of right. The cares of life are seem to be growing strangely dim. I am starting to enjoy this thing called creation. And my beans are sprouting and doing well. And I do like the way my lettuce is looking. We could have just as easily had a conversation about the farm, because it really is about the farm, isn't it, Ed?
Yes.
You mean the physical farm, the vegetable farm?
What's the difference?
Okay. So, Ion, why are they coming to, why is there a lot of traffic there? What are they listening to or interested in?
It's a concise way to find us easy.
Ion. See, yeah. It's all about Ion, Ed. Ion's the reason your site's in flame.
Well, the I is the important part.
That's exactly right. That is exactly correct.
All right.
Very good. Good. That's delicious. Congratulations. Great, great work.
Thank you.
And is everybody happy? How's James?
Great.
Good, 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 good. Okay, and...
Thank you very much, Ion.
Are y'all done?
Yep.
Okay. Therefore, we are eternally, completely, happily, deliciously farming.
Thanks, Bob, James, Ion, and Walter. And thank all of you for listening to The Information Farm.